I'm a big believer in creating financial stability for artists. And so it was important that I do it for myself too, right? That I find a way to make helping people energetically and financially sustainable for me.
Adrienne Rose White is a writer, actress, and as a producer, she has sold 5 TV shows. She developed the online course, How to Actually Sell a TV Show Organically, to empower and inform creatives on how to develop, package, and sell the story that only they can sell. So if you have dreams of being on TV and getting your story out there, Adrienne is the person to follow. Her clients have sold shows to big networks like Netflix and Paramount. But how does one go from struggling actress to industry insider? In this interview, we hear Adrienne's incredible story, all the ups and downs that it took to get to where she is, and how you can also overcome all those obstacles to get to where you belong. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts while taking a walk, thank you for taking me with you. I really needed the exercise. And also, please head over to the review section and leave us a 5-star review and say something nice. It really helps support the show. And thanks. Here's my interview with our new TV Insider best friend, Adrienne Rose White. Welcome to Get Clients First, the podcast for online coaches who have decided to leave vanity metrics behind and finally start making money by helping others now. Not when we have a bigger audience, not when the time is right, whatever that means, but right now. You have the gift and your clients are waiting for you to step up and help them out. Hi, I'm your host, Ina Coveney, six-figure entrepreneur and business coach, and my mission is to help you get clients now, even if you have a small audience. I crossed a six-figure mark in my business before I hit 1,000 followers on any of my platforms, and I teach you how to do the same. Listen for the lessons and strategies that will turn you into the coach they love to follow and can't wait to hire. This is your moment and there is no time to waste. Get ready because your breakthroughs begin now. Today we're talking with Adrienne Rose White. Adrienne, I'm so excited to meet you. Welcome to the podcast.
Ina, I'm so excited to meet you and excited to be here.
Okay, before we get started, why don't you tell everybody what is it that you do right now and who you help right now?
So right now, I help creatives put together their TV ideas as pitches so that they actually sell to aligned partners. So I'm an actress, a writer, and a knowledge worker. So I've sold TV shows, and so now I help other creatives put together the ideas so that they can actually sell them as TV shows.
I'm going to tell you of all of the different types of coaching and courses that are out there. This one just like blows my mind. I am just going to confess right now, I'm like obsessed with the entertainment industry. I know as much as I've been able to gather from just like reading a whole ton of books and watching a lot. So I can't wait to dive into this. But before we get there, can you please tell us, we're going to go way back. Get ready. It's like, tell me, where were you born and what were you like as a kid? So start there.
So I was born just outside of Los Angeles. And what was I like as a kid? I had a pretty big personality. I think it's funny. I actually just reconnected with a friend from preschool and she was telling me what she remembered of me from preschool. And she said, you know, you had a lot of big ideas. And when you had an idea, you were committed to it. Like, you're like, we're doing this.
So what do you remember from growing up? Were you always in LA?
No. So funny story. I moved to Missouri when I was almost 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And I always like to tell this. My dad used to read us the Chronicles of Narnia every night. And so he'd say, we're going to go to a magical place where it snows. And my brother and I would say, Narnia, Narnia. So one day he says, we're going to a place where it snows. And we say, Narnia, Narnia. And he said, no, we're going to Missouri. It had its ups and its downs. I was very used to my coastal life. And this was a very different pace, a very different culture. And so in some ways that was very challenging. I did a lot of times feel sort of like a fish out of water, But I also really appreciated there are some in the Midwest, there's so many kind people. And I grew up very close to a creek and a farm. So we were like running around in the woods, playing manhunt, hiking. There was a freedom that I don't think I would have had if I had grown up outside of Los Angeles. So it was different than what I expected at the time, and I'm very grateful for it now.
And you were talking a little bit about how challenging it was to move to Missouri. Do you remember any stories that kind of stuck with you of those challenges?
I do. So I went to an elementary school where, St. Louis is a pretty segregated, or can be a pretty segregated city. And so, but I had moved to the suburbs. And so when I think the first or second day of school, I got there and someone was like, "Where are you from?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm from Los Angeles. I just moved to Chesterfield." And they were like, "No, where are you? Like, you
From
don't talk." Yeah, there's both from and the like there were, because it's so segregated, kids were, but kids like rode buses from the city to come to these suburban public schools. So it was, I sort of didn't fit into anyone's idea of who I should be or how I should talk, or and that was pretty isolating that the other black kids were sort of like, "What's wrong with you?" And the white kids were sort of like, "What's wrong with you?" And I was like, I didn't know anything was wrong with me. So that was really hard. Feel that sort of feeling very isolated growing up.
It's like like right now I am from Venezuela, but whenever I talk to Venezuelans, I sound more Puerto Rican because I have been in the US for so long. But then when I speak in English, I speak with an accent. So it's like they're like there's no place where people just like they are just like you and talking just like you and relating just like you. So I can imagine going through that. When that happens to you, that becomes kind of like the fabric of how you learn how to interact with people, especially at such a young age. So, do you feel like did you build any protective sense of like how to talk to people or how to present yourself? Like, what do you think you learned at that early age based on that experience?
So at the time, I took away that I needed to be a chameleon, that I could present myself differently and different in different spaces and with different people so that I could get their approval and acceptance, which is hard. It's hard to be feel like you have to contort to be worthy of acceptance. On the one hand, it did, because I'm an actor, or eventually became an actor, like there was something in me that enjoyed finding the different points of connection with people. So in that sense, as an actor and a very empathetic person, I love that I learned how to empathize with so many different ways of being and understand them, because I wanted to be understood. So in that sense, it was very valuable. But at the same time, because my internal self-worth was so based on external acceptance, which is something you can't control, that led me to be so happy when someone liked me and so sad when someone didn't like me and that kind of thing. The meaning I make of it now is that I think our greatest obstacles can become our greatest triumphs. So the thing that is the thing that we had to overcome that built a muscle, that built a strength that that I wouldn't have otherwise had. So, for example, one of the first TV shows I sold with my creative partner at the time was called How to Be a White Guy, which followed two female entrepreneurs of color who couldn't get funding for their startup. So, as their last ditch attempt, they get their white bartender to pretend to be their CEO. So, they teach, and then they get the money, but they're stuck with him as their CEO. So, they have to teach him to use his privilege to help them get ahead. They have to teach him how to be a white guy. And I don't think, and that was born also of some other disappointments I had, and some disappointments that my creative partner had. But I think neither of us would have been able to put together a story like that if we hadn't personally experienced and had to transcend what it was like to be sort of misjudged, thought not worthy, thought other, thought that something's wrong with you or that you can't connect or do something. So I truly believe that we get to make the meaning from our stories. And that's why I love writing. That's why I love writing for TV and writing for movies, because it's remaking the meaning of the things that happen.
That is just, that's fascinating to me, because there are people out there who have had a similar experience and they don't walk away with that sense of, I can make lemonade with these lemons, right? Like I can actually impact more people. I can make people laugh with this. I can create a better life for myself by creating stories with this. I would love to know, where do you think that let's turn these lemons into lemonade mentality came from? Have you always been that optimistic, or were there some dark times in there? Like what do you make of it?
Never a dark moment, always light, always sunshine. No,
right.
No, I will say I have generally been an optimistic leaning person, at least on a conscious level. I think my subconscious sometimes gets pretty down or pretty anxious, but at least consciously, I choose to believe that things are happening in my favor, even difficult things, that it's there to help me cultivate something I wouldn't have already had. That doesn't mean if something bad happens, someone did something bad to me, that it's okay, or that they're, you know, but it does mean I get to make the meaning from it and decide what to do with it. So yeah, to answer, I would say I had a particularly dark time maybe about 2 or 3 years ago, where, you know, I'd had this career success. I, you know, sold a show and I was in a relationship at the time. And, you know, it seemed like a lot of things were coming together. And then one by one, the things that I'd worked so hard to build were falling away. The show, you know, it was 2020 when can you imagine? The show went away, that relationship ended. Yeah, my dog needed to get surgery. Like it was, there were a lot of things that happened where it seemed like my relationship with my creative partner, who we both had been so growth oriented for so long, we both realized we needed to grow in different directions and parted ways. So it was sort of, there was this moment where it felt like everything that I had worked so hard to build had fallen away. Mm-hmm. And I connected, and that was when I really had to look and say, like, is everything in my favor? Like, I don't know. Like, I it just seems like everything's falling apart. And that was when I really had to do some of the deeper work around what did I want to bring into the world, and start to see, like, oh, these things didn't work out, but they weren't actually really aligned with some of the deeper things going on. That relationship that didn't work, there were really important needs that weren't being met. And that creative partnership, even though we had grown so much together, I had sort of lost how to tap into my own voice because I was so focused on what our joint voice was together. When I started to look at those things not working out in that light, it really opened up what was possible. And I started connecting with the things, with the stories, with the people that were much, much, much more deeply aligned with how I wanted to show up in the world. And that really reaffirmed, I would say I had like a surface level optimism when I was younger. I was like, yeah, it's going to work out. I'm just going to keep going. And going through those hard times, some really hard times, like I'll even say it on this podcast. There was like I was going through depression. There was a period of time where I had to start borrowing money. Like it was very challenging, especially because I was always seen myself as so self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. But I think going through that tapped into a deeper layer of self-sufficiency and gave something deeper to that optimism, deeper to knowing that even those challenging situations, it was to help me face myself and face what I was afraid of, mm-hmm. and actually go through it instead of going around it. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yes. And it makes sense. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Because I feel like it's my mission to show everybody that we all have those moments, right? But it is that optimism that actually helps you rise above it later on. It doesn't mean that the bad moments don't happen, but it makes you a resilient person. And I want to know, Where do you think that came from? Were your parents always optimistic? Were they like, what, who was your example of like, you know what, I think things are going to turn out okay, even though I hear from everywhere that things might not. And being, you know, a woman of color in this country is something that is probably not going to work in my favor, but you know what, I'm going to rise above it because I have my own life and I have my own determination. Like, where do you think those thoughts came from? Who gave you that example?
You know, my dad was very into Tony Robbins. So we grew up, you know, he'd go to like Tony Robbins conferences. And I still remember when I was really like, when I was in preschool and kindergarten, every day he would get up and go, yes, 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 yes. Yeah. Whoa, yes. And so the whole family, we would stand in a circle and go, yes, 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 yes. Whoa, yes.
Amazing.
So, and you know, his mom told him every day, like when she was packing him off to school, bring joy into the world. So I think that my dad is very, very positively oriented. And so, yeah, that was definitely in the fabric of my childhood for sure.
What's your dad's name?
His name is Rick.
Can we just give Rick, let's give Rick a shout out. Rick, you're an amazing dad.
Rick, you're an amazing dad. So appreciate you. He's a great dad.
That is incredible. That's incredible. I'm so glad that I asked. I'm so glad that we got there. Like, that is an amazing story. That is an amazing story. I do want to ask you, what did you want to be when you grew up? What did you think? Like, it's senior year of high school. Where do you think your life is gonna go?
Good question. Because when I was in preschool, I'd say like nail technician. I just thought color nails. I wasn't allowed to paint my nails. I thought color nails were so pretty.
Right.
In high school, at senior year, I was gonna go to college for visual and environmental studies, which is basically art. I knew I was really interested in film. I didn't know if I wanted to be an actor or a director or a cinematographer, but I knew I really liked film. So yeah, I definitely was leaning towards that industry for sure.
So where did you go to school and what did you end up getting a degree on?
So I went to Harvard and I got
I'm
a
in
degree.
Boston. Woo!
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Boston.
Woo-hoo.
I did visual and environmental studies, which is basically art. So I did film theory, photography, and animation, and sort of created my own track.
Give me your favorite Harvard story, and it could be a gripe or a like your favorite Harvard story to tell.
Okay, it's actually about my friends, because I love the people I met at Harvard. I met some of my lifelong friends. So the big thing is the big game against Yale, Harvard, Yale. So my freshman year, a bunch of my new friends came up to my dorm room as I was getting ready. We're all going to walk to the stadium together. And one of my friends like, hurry up, we're going to be late. And I was like, wait, let me just get some tissues. And my friend said, okay, grandma. And I said, you call me grandma, but who are you going to call when you need tissues? It's cold out. And right. She was like, you, grandma. And that friend, we're about to start our own podcast, actually. And I'll just say the name of the podcast, Two Queens, Two Crowns.
Please.
Look out for it. It's about, you know, women who've been pitted against each other and how they're both actually queens and like have their own crowns. So we love to see women all thriving. Woot. It'll definitely have already been live by the time this comes out because we're end of February. We're starting.
Yay. All right. So we're going to put the link below. So you graduate from Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
How did you end up in Korea? I don't know if I'm skipping like 10 years in your story?
No. Like, that's the day after graduation, I got on the plane and went to Seoul, South Korea. Yeah. So
why did that happen?
So one of my good friends at the time was half Korean or continues to be half Korean. And so she wanted to meet her mom's side of the family and rediscover her roots. And we had traveled a lot together at that point. Like I had studied abroad in Argentina and Buenos Aires when she was backpacking through South America. I had an internship in London and she came through for my 21st birthday. I just like found Apparently my grandmother was really good at doing things on a budget, and I think I inherited that from her. Like, I was just like, how do I find the student angle? How do I get anywhere?
Yeah.
So when I was when I so I did that semester abroad, which was cheaper than going to Harvard. And then she hit me up and said, I'm going to Korea. Why don't you come to Korea after you graduate? And I thought to myself, there'll never be a time in my life when, well, not ne maybe not never, but I don't know when there'll be a time in my life when I'm not in school, I don't have a job, I'm not in a relationship that I'm obligated towards. Like, there's nothing in my life tying me to one place. You know what? Yeah, great. And there are a lot of like prep schools or hagwons that will recruit out of Ivy League schools to try and get teachers. So I when she planted that seed in my head, I talked to a school and they said they wanted me on board. And so yeah, I went out to work for a summer as an SAT tutor and teach also AP US history, which I was in no way qualified to teach. I want that to be clear. I just was the only one who had already taken AP US history. That was how I ended up on a plane to Seoul.
Thank you for sharing that story with us. I thought it was amazing because at this point, you're still just out of college, trying to figure out where you go next. So I want you to just paint a bridge for me from that point in time to selling your very first show. Paint that bridge for me.
Okay, yeah, it's a pretty long road. So someone else can do it faster, probably. But I decided I wanted to be an actor. Long story short, I thought I wanted to be an action star, so I found a Shaolin Academy in China and studied Kung Fu for a while in the mountains.
Nice.
Love that. Went to acting school at the Atlantic Theater Company in New York, which has a focus on creating your own work, not waiting to get a yes, but like creating your own yes. So that really helped me sort of think of myself as a creator and not just an actor. And I wrote a short film called Mira Mira that was set in Bahia, Brazil. So I shot half of it in Brazil and half of it in New York, and then edited it in LA. Like, I made the big move to LA after I'd booked a commercial that sort of paid for my move and got me into the Screen Actors Guild. So when I got to LA, that film, it took me so long to edit it. Because I didn't know what I didn't know. I would call that film basically my grad school. And but it got to some film festivals, which was great, and got some awards, which was great.
Amazing.
And then I worked at a boutique production company where I helped them make at reels for actors. And I would say that was sort of where I honed my skill set of being able to write and produce quickly, because I would like write the scenes, I would sometimes direct them, I would produce them, like hire the actors, everything. I'd sometimes oversee or help with the editing process. So it was a way of take like experiencing taking something from a conception or finding out what an actor needed to build out their reel all the way through completion. And then from there, one of my creative partner wrote this great pilot script for a web series called Quirky Female Protagonist. And I, having produced a lot of short things before, wanted to produce it. I ended up co-starring in it. We created it together. We got that into the LA Film Festival, which is where we started meeting production companies and producers, which at the time, web series were really popping off. So we got a meeting with Lakeshore. And at first it was just a general, and then a general, which is where they just get to know you and your voice. And then about a month later, they called us up and said, hey, do you have any TV shows? We didn't. But we said, yeah, absolutely. We absolutely have some TV shows for you to hear about. They're like, great, let's meet in a week. We're like, great. So we wrote a pitch in a week, took it in. Don't let anyone ever tell you can't option a show in December. I've heard this, that like, oh, they're closed, they're done, they don't have any more money. You can get the yes in December. You might not get the paycheck, but you can get the yes in December. You can get the yes anytime. So I think I tend to reject most limiting things, like, oh, this can't happen like that. Because in this Wild West industry, things happen how they happen. Like, everything happens not according to how pipelines usually go, and it's fine. So that was how we optioned our first TV show.
Okay, thank you. Like, that was, by the way, record time. That was like 60 seconds that you guided me through all of that. Here, because I want to start talking about what made you decide to start teaching about this stuff. But before we get there, before we get there, I want to know, you know, I look at that, of course, you just sped through something that I can only imagine had a whole ton of ups and downs, a whole ton of like, where is my next rent money going to come from? A lot of like, what should I be doing next? Like, there's a lot of that. But I would love it if you could just share with us just one story from that time that you still remember that maybe was formational for you as a, you know, as for what you're doing right now, or something that if our listeners are experiencing that feeling like, I don't know when or how this is ever going to work, something that would inspire them. So what story can you tell us from that time?
The story would be find your mentors. So I'm going to bring this back to Brian Pataka and then to a couple other mentors I also had, Molly Pearson, Annie Bergstein, now Compton, and Christina Sexton. Because you hit the nail on the head. I was not sure how to make any money after that tutoring experience in Korea. I thought I didn't want to go back into tutoring. And so I came to LA, I was auditioning, I was trying to put this movie together and I didn't know what to do. I was not auditioning for the roles I wanted. The roles I was getting weren't paying really well. And I was just like, I don't know how this works. I don't know what I'm supposed to do to be able to move forward here. And so I got really, really sad. Like I was depressed. I just couldn't, I was like, I know I'm capable of this thing, but I don't see a way forward. And that was where finding the right mentors was really, really important. So I'll start with Brian Pataka. Brian was at the time and continues to be a coach for actors. So, and sort of knows a lot about productivity and accountability. So with his help, I started to take the steps I needed to every week to get that movie done and made, like to start to break it down into smaller steps and be accountable to accomplishing them every week. And Molly Pearson had helped me conceive of the idea at the beginning. She had a produce your own work workshop. And so again, having that sort of structure and accountability was really helpful. Christina and Annie both encouraged me to go back to tutoring, but to approach it in a way that would support my creative work. So they advised, like Christina advised me to find tutoring companies and apply with them so that I could like just start getting work right away. And Annie advised me to start then reaching out to schools and like basically saying, I went to a, you know, you basically want your students to be like me. You want your students to like, you know, academically excel. So I can tutor your students in these subjects. What tutoring companies do you go to, or do you want to refer me directly? And through that advice of putting myself out there and like walking me through how to do it, those mentors really got me on a much, much better track and helped me build the financial stability I needed to have to be able to pursue this creative dream. So if there's one thing I will say, it is finding your mentors. And, you know, some people you might reach out and they say no, or they don't have time. Like, don't take that personally, but like having the gumption to go and find the people who've done what you want to do or have insight about how to do it. It can collapse time. It makes such a difference to have a great coach or to have a great, mentor.
Love it. Love it. Thank you for saying that. Now, how do you go from selling your show to helping others do it? Like, I'm interested in how did that spark of genius happen that you're like, I think I could create a course on this. I think I could actually teach other people how to do it. I think I have a process that would work for anybody who really wants to do this. How did that idea even come about?
It came about in a lot of different sort of pingy areas. So first of all, like I mentioned, I did tutor for many years in LA. So I did have a skill set around teaching. So I felt like I could teach, but I was teaching something, you know, I was teaching middle school and high school and I'd done it before. Like it got to a point where it was very tiring where I was like, oh, I like teaching, but I feel done with this material. Or my students are getting older and, you know, I'm not going to teach organic chemistry. Like, I don't feel like learning that.
Right.
Props to everyone who does. Great. Not for me. So I knew I had that. I knew I had the production experience because I'd produced films before. So I was like, okay, I have the teaching skills. I have the production experience. And I have this experience that no one really talks about in like an organized, systematic way. It's very mysterious how things get made in Hollywood. And once I had a system, well, I also had to take a second and step back and realize, like, I had to step back and realize I had optioned or sold 5 TV shows. Like, my friends didn't know I had done that because I was very in the mindset of, oh, it's not worth talking about until it's won an Emmy. Right. Like, until it's on the air and winning an Emmy, like, don't talk about it. Right. But when I reflected and realized, oh, I've actually, I do, in terms of pitching and selling a show, I actually have a skill set and know how to deliver on that. And that's not something I see people teaching or talking about, again, in a consistent way of how to actually get something in the right hands and paid for it. So it was sort of all of those pieces together. And then I also was thinking about how to start to lessen the repetitive work I was doing. Like, it felt like in tutoring, I was a lot of time teaching the same thing over and over again. And so in building a course, I thought about how do I make something that at least in some places in terms of the information is very automated so that I don't have to keep doing the repetitive work. Like, how do I simplify that? Because I'm a big believer in creating financial stability for artists. And so it was important that I do it for myself too, right? That I find a way to make helping people energetically and financially sustainable for me. And building it as a course was a way to do that, that I could impact and support more people without taxing myself in a way where I couldn't move forward with my own projects.
What is your biggest learned lesson from creating and selling a course?
You have to make peace with failing sometimes. Like, some stuff you're going to try, it's not going to work. And you're like, oh, I put so much time and effort into that. And it's like, well, it didn't work. You got to adjust it or try something different. Or sometimes you have to keep doing the thing that doesn't seem to be working yet because it will work and you just haven't given it enough time. So accepting not knowing and not having the answers and doing it anyway and treating it like an experiment where you're going to find the answers.
Can you tell us what your course is about and who it is for?
Sure. My course is about how to go from an idea to actually putting together a complete pitch and package that you can sell. So we cover everything from how do you know it's a good idea? How do you talk about it to get someone's attention? How do you write the initial documents to get someone interested? To all the way through, what do you actually say in the meeting? And I'm just about to add a lesson that's, how do you take feedback? Because I find a lot of people don't know how to take feedback in a way that actually makes a deal happen.
Yeah.
That's what we cover in the course. And I say the course is for really anyone who wants to sell a TV show, because little known fact, you do not have to be a writer to sell a TV show. You can be an actor. You could even be, I help someone sell a show who's a lawyer and doesn't want to go into entertainment, but he just had an idea and we sold it to CBS. So it's really for anyone who wants to sell a TV show. And in the course, I talk about how you need different materials based on what you want your role in the project to be. So if you just want to be a person who made an idea and someone else takes it and runs with it, that's very different than if you want to be the writer on the show, which is also different from if you want to be the actor or a director on the show. So we talk about all the different relationships you can have to the show. And how to build your team and your package to support your vision for how you want to be a part of it.
I just love it that you can really teach online about anything. This, I didn't even know this niche existed, but now that I know, I don't know how I'm going to be able to get it out of my mind. So thank you.
By joining the course, Ina, you should come play with us.
Oh my God, can you imagine? We are winding down here, but it's something that I would love to know. What do you think is the biggest misconception that people have of you as a successful woman in this industry?
I think the biggest misconception is that because I'm successful, that I know all the answers to a particular situation of like what to do. I find that I actually know the right questions to ask. Mm-hmm. Because the flip side of what I said earlier, finding mentors, which yes, find your mentors, is that some advice will work and some won't. Like some advice works for a particular person and for another person, it's not authentic and it doesn't resonate. Mm-hmm. And I used to think, oh, this person I really admire gave me this advice. I have to make it work. No, no, no. It's all about testing it to see if it works for you. And then doing, finding your version or your way, finding the philosophy or the principle behind it that resonates for you, but finding your actual execution or relationship to it. So I think sometimes people want me to like make the pitch for them or have the answers. And I'm like, no, 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 you're the one with the magic. I can just help ask the right questions and show you the ways that have worked before, but you have to bring your own magic to it. Like that's what's going to get something done and get something made.
I love it. And finally, if everybody who's listening had to do what you're about to tell them to do, and they have to do it in the next 24 hours, what would that thing be?
I would say, put one hand on your chest and one hand on your stomach and take a deep breath in and let it go. Another even deeper breath in and let it go. And just notice how you're feeling. Notice how your body feels. Notice where your emotions are. If you can name anything coming up, like name an emotion or name a feeling, that's great. And just ask yourself, can you accept what is happening right now? And whether you can or you can't, that is okay too. And then when you're ready, open your eyes.
My words were grateful and excited because this conversation has been so cool. You're such a cool person to know. Like you're just such a light. It's been really, really cool getting to know you over the past hour. So thank you so much for doing this. I'm gonna cry. I just do that. Can you please share with everybody, where can they get more of you? Where do they go get your course? Where do they go follow you on social media? How do they get more Adrian?
Oh, well, first of all, I just have to say, I'm so grateful that you made the space and asked such beautiful questions that let us know each other a little bit more deeply, or let me share who I am more deeply. I really appreciate you and so appreciate the space, this really magical space that you've made here. Thank you, Ina.
Thank you.
For people who want more, you can go to sellashow.com. There's a particular course I offer called Strike Gold, and you can check that out at sellashow.com/strikegold. If you want to know more about me, you can find my personal account on Instagram at Adrienne Rose White. That's A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E. The French way. Rose, like the flower, and white, W-H-I-T-E, like the color. So Adrienne Rose White. And my business is called Something Truly Brilliant because I liked the brilliance of a star and the brilliance of like learning intellectual things and like lighting up. So you can see more about the course, more about the work, more about pitching TV shows at Something Truly Brilliant on Instagram as well.
And I will put all of those links in the show notes so everybody can go get them. Adrienne, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Ina.
Hey there, Ina here. After listening to this episode, you may have a million questions. You can DM them all to me on Instagram at Ina Coveney, or you can head over to our free Facebook community and post your question there. Go to getclientsfirstpodcast.com/Facebook or click the link in the show notes. And make sure to hit follow or subscribe on your podcasting app so you don't miss another episode of the Get Clients First podcast. Coach, you got everything it takes to blow up your business. And I'm here to give you all the guidance and the push you need week after week. So it's a date. I'll see you on the next one.